I'm Fritz Springmeier. Welcome to my first podcast show. For 30 years, I've been a guest on countless radio shows. Many of you know who I am. And now I'm going to switch it around, you know, and now, for the first time, I'm going to be the host who interviews guests. Okay, so hopefully you'll hang around because we've got a great guest tonight. This is someone worth listening to, not because she holds any great titles in the system, but because she's so articulate and she's really fascinating. I find her really refreshing. She has a practical way of articulating ideas. But before I bring her on, I want to chat with you about what may arguably be the biggest or one of the biggest threats to the message of truthers. You know, whether you're a person of faith in Christ like myself or you're a scientist, you know, the postmodern mindset is a threat to anybody who believes in truth. And I think the reason why today's show, why the problem of postmodernism is so important to me, is that I was in college the last 2 years, 2015, 2016, and the millennials and the professors there in college were often postmodernists. So now to my great guest, Angela Jackson. She's a millennial. And she's worked her way out of the postmodern matrix, which is pretty amazing. I just can't assume that all of you understand what postmodernism is. So I may have her explain this, but just in short, postmodernism is this relativism. It's that, you know, truth is wherever you want it to be, you know, so like, hey, this person over here, he calls it torture, but for another person, it's just interrogation, you know? So there isn't any morals. Morality is relative. You know, there's all these, like, double standards. And you know, I saw a lot of the different aspects to this postmodernism, and I can talk about it a lot myself, but I'm hopefully we're going to hear about postmodernism from somebody who grew up in it, which is a totally different thing. You know, when I went to school, they focused on reading, writing, and arithmetic. And of course we had other subjects, but now when I look at schools today, they're like teaching sex, politics, gender, abortion, diversity, contraception, vaccinations, whew. And, you know, they had this attitude that, oh, you know, you're just supposed to accept all cultures, you know. Like, early in the 1990s, people would look at my research, like maybe I might be in photocopying stuff, and they'd see the word Illuminati and Satanism, you know, and they'd like, oh, they'd attack me saying, oh, it's just your opinion that Satanists are Satanists. What? You know, and if somebody wants to believe in Satan, who are you to judge them? Well, you know, quite frankly, listeners, I wasn't there judging. That was their idea that I was judging. But, hey, if somebody worships Satan, I think I have a right to call them a Satanist. What do you think? Anyway, behind their criticisms was this postmodern idea that, you know, hey, all values are okay, you know. So let's get my wonderful guest here now to my guest, Angela Jackson, who's a millennial who's worked her way out of the postmodern matrix. So,
hello.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for introducing yourself there a little bit. Maybe you can say a couple words to our audience, and then I'll ask you a few questions here.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me on. You know, I was raised in I went to an alternative school when I was in high school named Inglenook, which means a warm place by the fire. And our symbol was the yin yang. And that was the culmination of what is being taught in schools today, which is that all truth is relative because everybody is equal in their own way. And this, the triumph of diversity is really the postmodern answer to what they see as oppression. So they think that, you know, having a fixed value structure is an oppressive thing because it excludes some people. So, you know, I had to, you know, it was basically a very immoral place. And it did a lot of, I saw it do a lot of damage to the people that I grew up with.
Well, what would you say to someone who says all cultures are equal?
Cultural relativism?
Yeah.
Well, I would say that culture matters. And we're definitely seeing that now as more cultures are mixing. We're seeing that, you know, some cultures, for instance, don't value women to be equal to men. And I think that is a big issue with, you know, Sharia law now that the Muslim culture is confronting Western culture. and, you know, beyond that, before all of this happened, like almost 20 years ago, I believed that all cultures were just, you know, I believed that it was, that all cultures, I believed in cultural relativism. And the thing that really challenged that, and you can look this up on Wikipedia, is the idea that, and this is grotesque, I'm so sorry to bring it up, but in Africa, they had some tribes where it was considered acceptable to, like, sexually stimulate the children, like, as they're growing up. And I'm not joking. And this was a problem with liberal social psychologists and anthropologists in the 70s that they were like, you know, oh, well, is this actually wrong? You know, or is it acceptable within the context of their culture? Like, because they consider it normal, it doesn't harm the children, you know? And so I had to really, I have come to the conclusion that it's abuse. It's a horrible thing to do to children. And so that started me off on realizing that, you know, the belief systems that are held by a people, be they religious or even lawful, like ethical, or, you know, that those really matter, actually. I know it sounds ridiculous, but.
No, it makes a lot of sense. This postmodernism, like you're saying, where you've got these relative ideas where morality is just totally relative. I see all these double standards. I mean, they come down and guilt trip us in North America, like we got the sexism in North America, but then we can't talk about pedophilia over in Africa. We can't talk about the mutilation of clits by Muslim. We got all of this grotesque stuff. That, oh, well, cultural, you know, it's all equal. So I see this postmodernism, and tell me, you know, maybe address this if I'm right or wrong, but I see this postmodernism as great for mind control programmers, great for intellectual imposters that want to be dishonest and just pretend like they know something, but it's also great for anyone who's got deviant behavior like pedophilia. Oh, well, it's all right. It's all relative. I mean, you know, it's like mm-hmm. you can't. The only thing wrong, it seems like, in this postmodernism is to call something wrong. Can you talk
right.
about that?
Yeah. So, yeah, because then you're being divisive and you're being negative. And like one of the things that the public education system does is it teaches people to conform. And so, you know, this desire for consensus is actually like Soviet. The word Soviet means consensus. Oh, so, I mean, this idea that everybody should get along for the sake of a relationship, so that, you know, you would be inclusive and you would be nice and happy and fit in and go with the crowd and be a conformist. You know, that's actually the true hypocrisy of the left. So that the left says, oh, well, we value diversity, but then actually they don't, because if you have a different way of thinking than they do, then they want to shut you down.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
Sorry if I got away from your question there.
No. Could you give some examples from your own life of what you just talked about? About how you've seen they try to shut people down.
Right. Yeah. So definitely more now because of in the last year because of Trump, you know, and also, okay, I mean, you want to go back 20 years or you want to go back, you know, a couple of years, because in the last few years, we've had a barrage of divisive issues that have caused people to stop talking to each other. From vaccines to gun control because of all the school shootings, to gay marriage because of the Supreme Court decision, mm-hmm. to the transgender issue, which is huge. So we've had a lot of very divisive issues. But in terms of shutting down dissent, mm-hmm. I mean, when I was a liberal, I believed the argument was settled. I believed that we had the right answer. And the people who disagreed with us only disagreed with us because they had personality disorders or they were malevolent towards their fellow man. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't question global warming. You couldn't question gay rights.
Mm-hmm. So they say we must be tolerant no matter what, but as soon as you disagree with them, there's no toleration there. Oh, wow. Isn't that something? It's really a truthless world, and people that are truthers know that, you know, but the concept that Christ talked about, he said that we're to speak the truth in love, but what really is frightening about this whole modernism, or postmodernism, excuse me, is that it rejects the concept of love, and can you talk about, I said that wrong. I meant to say it rejects the concept of truth. Probably rejects the concept of love, too, because it's all about sex and not having any relationships. Could you talk about their attitude, the postmodern attitude that you grew up in and how it views the concept of truth and that there isn't a truth?
Yeah, okay. So when I say that I was raised in a postmodern world, I mean, I should clarify, like, my parents are nominal conservatives, but, you know, I was raised by the television and I was raised by the public education system. And then I went to this radical school, which is run by a man who, by two men who are postmodernists. And so one day in philosophy class, he turned a television to a dead channel, and he said, this is reality. Reality is actually a bunch of noise that doesn't make any sense. And so that was the kind of nihilism that underpins postmodernism, because postmodernism tries to destroy value structures because value structures are inherently discriminatory. And, like, ultimately they're trying to destroy white society because they see it as patriarchal. So they hate the Bible, they hate Christianity, and they've decided that they need to remake the world in order to progress. And so the answer for postmodernists is that, you know, so they try to reject truth because it's seen as oppressive, basically. You know, if there is a one truth, then that means some people are wrong, and then you have to suffer with chastisement or shame. Or fear, you know, it's a negative emotion and it's a bad thing, basically. And people are I think because the culture doesn't encourage people to think, that they become very emotional. Mm-hmm. But postmodernism artistically is based upon juxtaposition and dissonance. So, I mean, they would call, like, the tyranny of the line, you know, if that makes any sense. So in art, you know, they don't like things to make sense. They like things to be very chaotic, because what it does is it jumbles the value structure so that anything would be considered art, you know, because who's to say that, you know, a lampstand isn't as beautiful as a Monet, you know, because that's just discriminatory, and that just shows your bias, and you don't want to be biased. You want to have an open mind, and you want to be able to experience, you know, I don't know, it's kind of, but what it does is it opens people up to try anything, and that's the goal.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, because when I was in Amsterdam at their National Art Gallery, they had these beautiful Rembrandts and Dutch masters that were similar to Rembrandt, and then all of a sudden you had this postmodern art that was just garbage, basically, hanging up there like, well, this is art too, you know? I mean, say what? Well, I got a question here, because I've been hearing that there's no biological basis for gender, you know? What's this situation on this, Angela? Is there really no biological basis for gender? I mean, you grew up with them. Now, let me interrupt myself here. Is Common Core part of this whole postmodern thing? When the schools are on Common Core, are they teaching postmodernism?
Well, see, I'm actually from Canada, so I don't have an experience of Common Core. From what I know about it, Common Core is based upon a communist structure of teaching. I know that the math is insane, but I can't really say it's anything worse than what they've been teaching since the 1950s, because Bloom's taxonomies is the fundamental core of all education systems, and he was inspired by Marx and all the, and then a bunch of postmodernists like Theodore Adorno and Marcuse. So,
well, it seems to me,
I'm sorry, I can't comment directly on that.
Okay. It seems to me that in these Common Core curriculums that they're teaching that there's no biological basis for gender. And so what do you think about that? What have you learned on that whole subject?
Right. So let me just to back up what I said about Bloom, you know, in Bloom's taxonomies, here's just a quote from him.
Yeah.
And he says, we recognize the point of view that truth and knowledge are only relative, and that there are no hard and fast truths which exist for all times and places. And that's Benjamin S. Bloom, Taxonomy of Educational Objectives, the Classification of Educational Goals, Handbook 1, Cognitive Domain. So, like, that's an example of where education systems are coming from. But in terms of biological gender, like, see, I was raised to think that being a woman was oppressive, because being a woman meant that you couldn't be a man, basically. And so I was raised to sort of think that as a woman, if I were to be a housewife and have children, that would be a shame and that would be a dishonor.
In other words, where there's differences, you have an unfair power structure, if I'm catching the drift of postmodern thought correctly. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, continue. This is fascinating.
Yeah. So they raised us thinking that the binary gender structure was a social construct. So that's basically what they've been teaching in sociology for some time. I don't know exactly how long, but a very long time. So everything is a social construct, right? And so gender is a social construct. Gender doesn't really exist because we're all equal, right? Mm-hmm. So they just want everyone to be equal. And so they pride that above everything else. It doesn't matter if families are collapsing. It doesn't matter if men feel useless and women can't succeed being men and women at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter what they do to destroy the structure of society, so long as we're all free and equal, you know, and so long as we're all together, you know. So growing up, they tried to destroy gender because it was considered unfair. That's all. And then, of course, with homosexuality and divorce and everything, it's like, well, the family doesn't mean anything anyway, so, you know. So they're trying to say that there's no biological basis for gender, and they're starting to go after the biologists. Mm-hmm. This I saw a video about this in Germany mm-hmm. when they were, and it was in German, so I didn't know exactly what they were saying, but
okay.
they stormed a classroom, biology classroom, because they consider teaching the concept that there are two genders to be oppressive, because, you know, we're in an age where surgically you can alter people to the point, and like maybe we can have three child babies now. Like Elton John has a child that's been fathered by three different people, him and his male partner and another woman. And then I believe it was carried by a surrogate. So that child, you could say, technically has four parents. And
wow.
So we're coming into an age where this is going to be a reality, where technology can cater to the dysfunctional mating relationships in a postmodern world. So, but they need to have a social impetus to push the technology. And that's the issue with gay marriage and gay relationships, actually, you know, and I love these people, but they want to have their own children, and that's physically impossible. And that's why in Ontario, they have four placements for the parent name. They don't have mother, they don't have father on the, I believe, I'm not sure if they've implemented that right now, but they're moving towards it. They want to have parent 1, 2, 3, and 4. And because for gay people, you know, there isn't necessarily a mother and a father.
Uh-huh.
You know, there could be a sperm donor, there could be a surrogate mother, there could be an egg donor, you know.
Wow.
So, you know, it is actually coming to the point where biological gender won't necessarily matter, but first we need to have, there's it needs to be like a social, so there needs to be a market for it, right? So, because economics is a mixture of social organization and, you know, economic organization, like finances and economies, products, right? Product demand. So they're destroying gender socially because they want to free women. And in freeing women, they destroy femininity and they destroy the impetus for young men to get jobs and support their families. So that's why so many young men are playing video games now. And then they appeal to the lack of a strong male role model in young men because there's so much divorce. And then a lot of young, and also there's a, so they appeal to the lack of a strong male role model because a lot of young men, and this is my analysis, who want to become women or who are gay, they seek the approval of older, more powerful men in the dominance hierarchy. And so they're trying to attract a man, and they're just very dysfunctional. You see what I mean? And likewise mm-hmm. with lesbian women, you know, as women, we've been told that, you know, being a homemaker, you're giving up and you have no value as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
You're taught to compete as a man in what is a male world, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a lot of women who are gay, they just have an issue where they want to be men, right? So, I mean, the gender issue has hit full force here in Toronto, because I've watched Jordan Peterson working hard against what he calls compelled speech, and it's not about transgender people. They did a bait and switch. So,
well, who is Peterson? Go ahead and tell our listeners who Peterson is, because most of them probably haven't heard of him, since he's a Toronto professor.
Yeah, Jordan Peterson is a psychology professor at U of T, and he was raised in an NDP community, but then he read about the Gulag Archipelago by Alexander Solzhenitsyn,
uh-huh.
and he was a famous Soviet dissident
right.
out of Russia. And so he now hates socialism, and he studied it for a long time. He was, you know, scarred by the Cold War,
mm-hmm.
and he was scarred by the Holocaust. So for him, you know, he sees the Marxist agenda, And he opposes compelled speech because he says that it isn't about calling a transgendered man she, it's about the third gender and the fourth gender, and in some cases the 26th gender, because what they've done is they've broken up sexuality into four different components. So there's who you're attracted to, there's what you identify as, there's what you dress as, and there's who you're emotionally, so there's who you're sexually attracted to and who you're emotionally attracted to. And some people might be familiar with the purple hippo, which I originally saw coming out of Alabama in 2015, and it's in Alberta here in Canada as of last year. And what it does is they're teaching children that, you know, there's your sex assigned at birth, you know, there's the sex that you want to be and that you identify as. You see what I mean?
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
What you end up with is like you multiply the combinations, right?
Right. In New York City, they've got 95.
It's
95
exactly.
Genders.
So so what they've done is they've created gender pronouns to deal with these different gender identities. And Peterson became famous because he had a video called A Professor Against PC Culture, in which he stated that he considered it against his rights as an individual to be forced to call somebody Z and Zer instead of he and her. Because they've made up pronouns.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you've described that postmodernism, as we're experiencing it now, as it's being shoved down our throats, is really just upgraded Marxism. Now, when I grew up, we had the common garden variety of Marxism, but it's like they've taken it to a whole new level. And then you've also described that there's this progressive agenda, and I might even postulate that this whole thing, this agenda, is programming people to be new citizens for a globalist world. So would you want to address that? Am I right? Or address this whole issue of how Marxism is being upgraded that you mentioned?
Well, there's traditional Marxism and there's transformational Marxism, from what I know.
Okay.
So transformational Marxism is the kind of Marxism where it's not just about economics, it's about the social sphere. So this comes, you know, out of the Frankfurt School, which people might be familiar with. And, you know, the Frankfurt School decided, see, the problem with Marxism is that it kept failing. You know, it kept being proven wrong. And so, you know, before the First World War, all the true intelligentsia in Europe had already thrown Marxism out to the trash heap. But what happened is that it became very popular amongst the masses, if I could use a Marxist term, the masses of people. And so it caught on like wildfire amongst the average person. And so the intellectual hardcore cutting edge of Marxism, having failed, had to reevaluate its premises in order to justify its failure. So the First World War was a devastating challenge for Marxism because they said, how can all of these impoverished masses go and fight and die for the capitalist overlords that are oppressing them? See, that was like the ultimate disproof of Marxism. And so they decided that it was because they had internalized their oppressors and because, you know, their families depended on them. So what came out of this was the Frankfurt School fundamentally. And these guys decided that they had to destroy the social structure of the family in order to fully implement Marxism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's actual quotes to that effect, isn't there?
Yeah. There are.
I mean, I'm not expecting you to know site, page, and book, but yeah, from my experience in reading some of this socialist, Fabian socialist, Marxist garbage, every now and then you come to places where they say that the family has to be destroyed and the children have to be turned against their parents, which is what they did in under communism.
Yeah, absolutely. They decided that the family structure was the only thing standing in the way of true Marxism, of socialism working. Because they've decided that we've internalized our oppressors and we need to change the way that we're thinking. So like in the Gulag Archipelago, Alexander Solzhenitsyn pointed out that the true criminals were the political dissidents. So they actually put the petty criminals in charge of the intellectual criminals. So somebody who was a murderer or a rapist or a robber, they were considered to be victims who had internalized capitalism. And the only reason that they were committing these crimes is because they had internalized the capitalist power structure. And so they were really victims. But the political dissidents, those were the true threats to communism, which is a true statement. So the petty criminals, if you could call murder petty, but the conventional criminals were put in charge of the political prisoners mm-hmm. in the gulags.
Mm-hmm. Well, I experienced a little bit of that myself, having been sent to prison, and I was treated worse than the common inmates. So it was obvious that they viewed someone who was a dissident to the New World Order as more of a threat than someone who was just a murderer or something like that. So yeah, I experienced a little bit of that myself. But not to the degree that Alexander Solzhenitsyn described, which, you know, I've read his book, and it's a great book. Russian books, by the way, for our listening audience, if you're ever in a situation where you've got a lot of time, that's when you want a Russian book because they're long. Or War and Peace by Tolstoy will keep you busy for a long time. Okay, one of the things that I experienced, and I mean, all the things that you're talking about, when I went to college, I was brushing up against these things when I was in college the last couple years. That's why this, I see this whole challenge to, the, you know, that they're saying that there's no objective truth. You know, as a Christian, we were taught to bring people to the truth, but what do you do when people reject that they don't even believe that there is a real truth, you know, and then you can, anything you want to believe is okay. And so I really think that this whole thing is really it's very important for the churches and the truth movement and everybody to start coming up with answers. And you found answers. You had to find the answers. You are out there looking for answers. So, because you were a truth lover, and you had to work through all of this programming that they had given you, and it's just amazing. I just wonder how you managed to work your way through the enormous amount of, I'm going to call it mind control or programming. It blows my mind that you could actually free yourself from all of this. Maybe you can address some of your path or how you got out of this whole thing.
Yeah, sure. So one issue is they try to say that there's no such thing as objective truth based upon a philosophical understanding of reality. And that philosophy would say that, you know, for instance, how do you know that the color blue that you're seeing is the same color blue that somebody else is seeing? And, you know, you struggle with things like this. So I finally realized that, you know, science is incompatible with these things because blue is a measurable wavelength of light, you know,
yep.
And that you could say that maybe it doesn't appear the same way in your brain as it appears in mine, but it does actually exist.
Right.
So there is an objective reality.
Mm-hmm.
And we are all, you know, I mean, even if you're raised completely following everything about evolution, you could say that, you know, we've all evolved to course to have our brains correspond with an objective reality, you know, and so like that's why the gender benders are going to attack biology, because science is actually incompatible with this worldview. And I did take some science classes, so I understood some things about chemistry that allowed me to stay pinned down into reality.
Mm-hmm.
So that was you know, that was actually a milestone. I know it sounds kind of ridiculous, but
Well, jumping in here, you know, there's the story of the blind men going up, the four blind men going up to the elephant, and one's feeling the trunk, one's feeling the ear, one's feeling the leg, and one's feeling the tail, you know, and the blind men all have a different idea. And so this is kind of like where they're going, is they're like, well, you know, we all just see a different part of things, but it's all our truth and everything. But, you know, the mass media has been dumbing people down, and crucial information that people really need is routinely left out of what they're given. So I understand that a lot of people don't have a lot of information to think, to use. They're like the blind men, but that doesn't mean that the elephant is an objective reality just because we've got a bunch of blind men feeling them. The elephant does exist. And so continue with this describing. You were on a roll there. I kind of jumped in here to add my own 2 cents, but continue on that whole idea that you.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. Yeah. And so I also came across this other philosophical concept that anything that's true is useful. And they say, you know, well, this is the example that if you know what time the bus is going to arrive at the bus stop, then that information is true because it's useful to you. And so I began to understand that, you know, I had to survive, and I wanted to survive. You know, that's actually important because a lot of millennials are very demoralized, and a lot of them don't even necessarily have anything to fight for because they feel so bad about everything. Mm-hmm. And that's really a shame because we live in the most equal and plentiful society that's ever been created. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of potential.
Yes.
That just goes to show you that, you know, how subversive and demonic this Marxist socialist agenda is, because it's just trying to get people to throw everything that they've been given away for the sake of accepting government handouts and the government's direction and the, you know, the advice of experts, right? Because these experts know more than they do. And people just get so easily dazzled, bamboozled, and bullied, in my opinion, mm-hmm. by people that they see as more intelligent than them. Mm-hmm. And especially in such a complicated world, it's easy to just sort of bamboozle people. So, and make people feel like they can't make their own decisions. So, I mean, that's really what I see underpinning a lot of the behavior amongst my peers. Not to say that they're not intelligent people, because some of them are smarter than me. They're very intelligent, but, you know, they're nice people, and nice people will always defer, you know, for the sake of being kind or being respectful. So they'll listen to who they see. Like, global warming is a really good example. You know, they think, well, all the scientists are good, honest people, and they're working hard, so we're going to listen to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we're going to just unquestioningly accept everything that they're telling us.
Right.
So,
well, you know, one of the things, and this works, it fits in with a lot of the other things that you were saying. I mean, how your generation has been beat down. They just constantly strip your generation, the millennials, of anything that would give them hope. And, you know, there's so much against them. The rent's high. It's hard to get jobs. It's all this stuff. And I've been around the millennials. I was in college with them. I've lived with them. And it's just like they get down, beat down so bad that they just want to escape. And so this whole reality can be whatever you want, you know, just play a video game and go into this pseudo reality, you know, this virtual world reality. I saw a lot of escapism. Can you address that and how it fits in, or just talk about escapism?
Yeah. So, it's like, video games, movies, television, life is, short, brutish, and cruel. You know, we're seen as animals. We're seen as having nothing, no spiritual substance. We're seen as having no value to our lives. We're seen as privileged. And especially, I mean, Canada, it's not as bad, but in America, you know, I do understand that There's a lot of pressure on young people because they're perceived as very privileged and, like, you know, I mean, like, as if they couldn't possibly live up to all the great things they've been given, that sort of thing. Or maybe they should feel bad about themselves because they haven't accomplished what they're supposed to have accomplished. You know, and I understand there's a lot of pressure and there's a lot of hatred, actually, towards Americans abroad. You know, people, so for the young millennial, it's, you know, they're, a lot of them are just trying to do the right thing. And they just have been told that, you know, they can't do the right thing because they're, you know, too stupid or anyway. So the escapism comes from, the futility that they perceive in life, you know, because all children will rebel against their parents. And if they're given an avenue of rebellion, they'll follow it. So, you know, we were busy rebelling against what we saw. And the baby boomers are actually rebellious themselves. But we're trying to rebel. And in rebelling, what we do is we throw the baby out with the bathwater. We throw everything out. And then we live in a world that's existentialist, it's nihilist, it's valueless, we're told. I mean, the universities aren't helping people. You know, they're screwing people up, excuse my language, they're screwing people up even more than society already has, you know? I mean, you can talk about in the 1990s, they had that song, Losing My Religion. I mean, that was like almost 30 years, that was like 25 years ago, you know, and it was an issue for the Gen Xers, right? Mm-hmm. So escapism is just a way of running from what you perceive as too great a responsibility because there's no acceptance for who you are. So we're all supposed to be rocket scientists or physicists or engineers. We're supposed to do something really great. And if we are not really, really great, then we might as well just drop out of society because there's this pressure that there are too many people and that if you're not productive and you're not a productive member of society, how do you justify your existence? How do you justify your participation in this society? So what I'm seeing with at least a lot of millennials that are thinking millennials, you know, is that they're shutting down because they feel like they can't compete and they feel like they're never going to do anything meaningful because they don't believe in a spiritual substance of man of any kind, let alone biblical. And so the drugs, the sex, the television, the video games, the rise of rave culture, the rise of MDMA, research chemicals are really big. Marijuana is going to be legal. You know, all we want to do is smoke marijuana and drop out because we feel that we can't contribute anything. And also, the world is very unfair. You know, there's a lot of things going on that people don't know what to do about it, you know, and then we're lied to and we're told that we're the problem, you know, humans are the problem. And so, you know, they've been sold a bag. They've been told that they're basically, you know, they're just trying to escape what they see as a futile situation because it's easier and then it's considered acceptable and cool. Right?
Yeah. So. So the last.
Sorry, that was a bit of a rant there.
It's okay. I've always been very impressed to hear you speak, Angela, and I really enjoy the way you articulate those fallacies, which you've been doing. And so the last time I was in Toronto was in the 1980s. So how's it changed since then?
Well, Toronto is a liberal paradise. You know, we're a good, clean city. We are the third most cosmopolitan city in the world. We have a booming population. White people, and that includes white immigrants from Russia and Eastern Europe. I mean, we're going to be a minority very, very soon. There's so much immigration and, you know, we've got socialized healthcare. Although, I did mention to you that we don't have dental coverage or vision coverage like you do in most European countries. So it's not truly social health care.
And even here in America, we've got dental care along with it. So, yeah, we're ahead of you, and we're not supposedly a socialist. That's kind of ironic.
Yeah, so Toronto is having a construction boom right now because Canada survived the Great Recession as the only G8 country which didn't need massive bailouts. I mean, Stephen Harper authorized a bailout, but he never signed. He signed almost none of the checks. So there was no, like, reconstruction money because... Anyway, so Canada did very well, and we were seen as a solid investment, especially because of, you know, residential is always a solid investment, right? Like we saw with the mortgage crash, everybody thought, oh, well, if I buy a house, then my money won't be wasted or get lost. So we've got 250 skyscrapers in the downtown core. Everybody's coming here. It's mostly Russian and Chinese. So they're investing in housing in Canada, and also we have very good immigration laws where you can reunify with all of your family members overseas. You can bring them all over. So once you get one person, you can get everybody else who's even remotely related. Not remotely, but you know, it's pretty good. So Toronto is also one of the youngest cities and the most educated cities in the world. We have more university graduates than I think any city in the world because of the immigration laws. So if you have a bachelor's degree from India and you want to immigrate to Canada, then you can immigrate anywhere you want. And a lot of them will choose Toronto because we have all the jobs.
So it's really a ideal place to set up like the flag bearer of this whole postmodernism. So Toronto is sort of like a leading city in the whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, what they're doing is they're advertising to people with different cultural backgrounds. And so they're learning how to manipulate people with different cultural backgrounds. So they're learning how to advertise to the Chinese, to the Indians, Muslims. We have stores that sell hijabs. They're very stylish, expensive stores. So they're testing out the programming, you know, and they're selling, you know, the New World Order lie. And a lot of these people don't understand the history of Western civilization. So they don't really understand when they've lost rights. Like they don't understand America, and everybody, a lot of people hate America in Canada, a lot of the immigrants. They don't understand what the Constitution is.
All right.
So.
Well, Angela, this is our time's up. But Angela Jackson, thank you for being my first guest on my first segment. And at this point, I need to tell people that, you know, there's going to be another segment, but the second segment is by subscription. And to get us to subscribe to the second segment that I'm going to do is you need to go to freemantv.com, and then the first thing that you'll see there is how to get subscribe. There's you know, you can click to subscribe, and it's less than $1.50 per week. And I hope that people would do that, because by doing that, you help me be able to put these kind of shows on. And, you know, so go to that first button there and support our efforts. And I will see you then on the second half, which will be on the subscription side of things. And again, that's Freeman TV. And I hope that... we get a lot of new listeners, because I'm just getting started, and I need the encouragement and need to have your support. So if you would enjoy learning more about the issues today, that's what I'm going to work on, is these kind of issues that are major and important. You know, I got a series of guests that I'm going to go ahead and ask to be on. I'm not going to mention them because at this point, because that might come across like I was promising to have some of these people on, and I haven't lined them. I haven't gotten them all lined up for sure, but we'll be dealing with the issues that are very important for us. For instance, like vaccinations. Vaccinations tie into the whole thing that Angela's been talking about. That's part of this whole Marxist agenda, a big brother, you know. And so there's a lot of more to discuss, and I hope to hear, or I hope that you will hear us on the second segment. And again, I want to thank Angela so much for being here with us tonight and articulating. It's just so tremendous and encouraging. It gives me a lot of hope that someone who was immersed in the propaganda of the Matrix, that grew up, you know, with the video games, with the television as their parents, and was totally immersed in this, could love the truth so much, like Angela, that they could seek the truth and actually find it and break the programming. And so that's this gives. This should give all of the listeners hope that we can go forward with knowing that it is possible that not all of the millennial generation is lost. So thanks again, Angela, and thank you, listeners. We'll see you on the other side.
Thank you.